This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. It's feeling good. Back in our normal routine. Early week means my guy Adam Burke has joining us right now at Skating Tripods on Twitter. Of course, I am Tim Murray. Matt Eumanns later on this week as we get through week one. Week zero in the books, and the dogs were barking 4-0 ATS. Line moves outside of Georgia Tech. Be damned. Adam Burke has got his column up, reactions, updated power ratings. It feels good, man. We're back into it. We're back into the routine, and I'm ready to roll for another year here.
Yeah, man, good to be back with you. By the way, speaking of line moves be damned, NFL preseason was very much line moves be damned. So, a lot of people trying to ease the pain with the closing line value that they got, but it certainly has not helped so far here this football season. But I wouldn't expect that to continue being the case. I think we will see that kind of level off a little bit, and obviously a much larger sample size of games here this week.
Well, let's start with the biggest game of the weekend and certainly the biggest surprise of the weekend, as Florida State, fresh off of an ACC championship, a 13-0 regular season, they get knocked off as a 10.5-point favorite in Ireland by Georgia Tech. And, I think you and I talked about this when we previewed the ACC, because that's one of the conferences that you wrote up for the VSiN College Football Betting Guy, which, by the way, still very, very helpful this time of year. Just because we had four games and six FBS teams playing doesn't mean you can't get your hands on the VSiN College Football Betting Guy, which is available at vsin.com/subscribe. But I think you and I both agreed that the schedule for Georgia Tech was brutal, but that they were going to be pesky and that they very well could pull off an outright upsets now. So as we watched that unfold on Saturday afternoon, depending on where you were, what was your biggest takeaway? Because for me, Adam, I was just blown away by the fact that Georgia Tech said, we're going to run this ball at you and you got to stop us. And after an opening drive where Florida State went through Georgia Tech's defense like it was Swiss cheese, it was pretty slim pickings for Florida State after that. And Georgia Tech really was able to run the ball quite well with one Haynes to the next, Haynes King and Jamal Haynes. They were terrific.
Yeah, they really were. I mean, I think continuity is really the big takeaway there for me. And, we talked about this last week on the pod when we were going over week zero. We had about a 20-minute segment or so on that. I think that there was a lot to be said for Georgia Tech coming into the season that their guys didn't hit the portal en masse. When you're a mediocre type of Power Four conference team, guys want to play in the spotlight, right? So the better players that you have are probably going to move on. They're probably going to go somewhere else, or maybe they have an opportunity to, play on a grander stage. But for Georgia Tech and for Brent Key, they held on to most of their team. They were able to keep a lot of their guys around. And I think there's something to be said about that. And I think we saw that play out where it's not that, Florida State had a big exodus to the transfer portal or anything like that. They just lost a bunch of guys to the NFL because they had a bunch of guys who were really good on last year's team. And we saw that, that turnover kind of negatively impact them. Now, they didn't have their offensive coordinator, Alex Atkins. He's suspended for the first three games of the year. Maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe, they just weren't really fully buttoned up, weren't really ready to go. But the fact that Georgia Tech dominated in the trenches against Florida State, which should never happen, and they just looked crisper. They just looked to be more in sync. One other thing here that, I think will probably get obscured a little bit because everyone's going to look at this as, oh, Florida State played so bad. Florida State, they suck. I'm going to drop them in my power ratings and all of that. I mentioned this last week on the segment. Georgia Tech brought in Tyler Santucci to be the defensive coordinator, an arm of the Mike Elko coaching tree, and the defense had a phenomenal game plan. And you can do that at the college ranks. If you've got the right coordinator, you can maximize your talent, even if it's a lesser talent level than your opponent. And that's what we saw out of Georgia Tech, really on both sides of the ball in that game.
Yeah, so the question now begs, and you have it updated, so I guess before I ask the question generally to everybody listening, what did you do in your power ratings with Florida State and Georgia Tech?
Yeah, so, you know, the thing about the power ratings, I should mention this first. So what I do first is I compare what my line was to the closing line. My line was 13.5 in that game. Obviously, as you mentioned, it closed 10.5 for the most part. So I compare my line to the closing line. That's my starting point. And if I'm off, as I was in this game by 3 points, I'm probably going to make an adjustment to one or both of the teams involved. The second step is to study the box score, right? Did something fluky happen? You know, a big time turnover discrepancy? Did a team, you know, maybe give up an 86-yard pick six, something like that, where maybe, you know, they were going in, but a mistake happened. It changed the complexion of the game, stuff like that. So I study the box score. And the third thing is look for injury information, which in college football remains really, really difficult to find. But my number was off by 3 points. And as I mentioned, Georgia Tech won the box score. And I think pretty clearly at that. I dropped Florida State 3.5 points in my power ratings. I bumped up Georgia Tech 2 points. So if we ran it back, I would still have Florida State, you know, as an 8-point favorite in the game, which maybe that sounds a little bit crazy. Maybe it's not. I don't want to overreact to one data point. But I certainly dropped the Seminoles and bumped up Georgia Tech off that performance.
So up next, Boston College for Florida State. They get a little extra time to prepare for that. The market has reacted quite significantly here in this spot. As we record this on a late Monday night, we are seeing a 15.5 out there at Circa. This was 21 and... You know, Steve Fezzik, I joined Scott Seidenberg, our former colleague at VSiN, during that radio row at Circa, and Steve Fezzik jumped on the podcast, and he mentioned that he liked Boston College, or was asking about Boston College in this particular spot. And now this number is sitting at 15.5, 16. I think if you look hard, you might be able to find a 17 out there. And then on the flip side, knowing me, Adam, and we'll do this on the podcast every Monday or whenever we record, I love me some letdown spots. Georgia Tech playing Georgia State. You wrote up the Sun Belt. So this kind of fits right into where you've broken down. You wrote up the Sun Belt. You wrote up the ACC. Let's start with Boston College, Florida State. Has this line moved too much, or is this understandable with the move here with Boston College now under a 17-point underdog?
So my number on the game is 20, which is an indication to me that I didn't lower Florida State enough, right? Because like I said, the first step is I compare the closing line to what my line was. Clearly, I didn't punish Florida State enough for that performance last week. Also, part of this handicap is Boston College brings in Bill O'Brien as the head coach. And as you mentioned, I wrote about the ACC, so this is something that's very much at the tip of my tongue here. I don't know how great of a fit this is for this season. You know, Boston College is a run the football type of team. They have been for a long time. Well, they weren't as much of a run heavy team under Jeff Hafley as they were under Steve Adazio. Bill O'Brien has a quarterback here in Thomas Castellanos, who's a much better runner than a passer. I mean, he basically had almost as many touchdowns as interceptions, did have 13 rushing touchdowns, and ran for over 1,100 yards. So I think, you know, if Bill O'Brien is willing to cave a little bit and have more of a running threat at quarterback, then this can work. The problem is, I don't know that Bill O'Brien really wants to do that. So I'm curious if this is a square peg and round hole situation here. But again, I am taking note of the fact that my line's 20, market is as low as 15.5. At, you know, a sharp book like Circa and a public book like DraftKings, as we're recording here on Monday night, I didn't lower Florida State enough is what this is telling me. So probably an adjustment I will make going into week two, but I'm not ready to fade Florida State again, because I think Georgia Tech might just be a pretty decent team. And I don't know that about Boston College yet.
Georgia Tech now a 22-point favorite against Georgia State. And my eyes were immediately like, I got to take Georgia State. The issue, as we'll get into, and as you wrote up in our VSiN College Football Betting Guide, Sean Elliott, their former coach, who helped guide them to a bowl game last year, and they won said bowl game out in Idaho by a lot, he rolled out middle of spring practice. So this team is working a bit behind the eight ball, right? Where they bring in Del McGee from the Georgia staff. So that's where I'm a bit hesitant, Adam, where I'm thinking, I really want to take Georgia State. I may still get there based off of principle, but I just don't know what to expect from the Panthers this year, knowing that this is a completely new staff late into the process.
Yeah, the thing about Sean Elliott, he goes back to South Carolina to be the run game coordinator and the tight ends coach. So, we saw a lot of college head coaches either go be coordinators somewhere at the college ranks. Halfley, who we just talked about with Boston College, went to the NFL to be the Packers defensive coordinator. Nick Saban retired. We saw a lot of head coaches go, the hell with this. I don't want to deal with the NIL. I don't want to deal with the portal. I just don't want to do it. So Elliott goes back to South Carolina. And look, I mean, Georgia State's temporary loss may be a long-term gain because they brought in Del McGee, who's coached in the state of Georgia almost his entire career, played at Auburn, spent a year at Auburn as an analyst, but he's been in Georgia college football or high school football for a long time. So he has a lot of connections there in a state that has really, really good high school football. But I don't think it really helps Georgia State for this season. They lose Darren Granger, who was basically their everything on offense the last, 12 years. Marcus Carroll, running back, great player. Robert Lewis, wide receiver, great player. Top lineman Montavious Cunningham went to Virginia Tech. So this is an offense that lost a lot of its impact type of personnel from last season. Well, I think they fight. Absolutely, I think they fight in this game. I think the defense, they gave up 6.3 yards per play last year, bottom 20 nationally. That's not great. I think they can hang in this game for a little while. I don't know if they can hang for the full 60 if there is a hangover effect for Georgia Tech here. But I do think Georgia State, as the year goes along, could be a really interesting team. But there's so much turnover here that facing a Georgia Tech team, a Power Four conference team, I'd be worried about the Panthers' ability to stick around here. I'm pretty much close to the market on the number. Even with my adjustment to Georgia Tech, I have this 21.5, but this will not be a bet for me.
Yeah, and I think 11.5 is out there in the first half, so that might be an angle. I just want to run through. We've had, since 2012, there have been six games take place in Ireland, and they all started the season there. The previous three games were either midseason or at the end of the year. So let's have a little fun. 2012, Notre Dame plays Navy at Aviva Stadium, where they played this game just the other day. Notre Dame beat Navy 50-10. Navy came home, had a bye week. Notre Dame played Purdue. This is a Notre Dame team that went to the national championship that year and needed a late field goal to win that game over a pretty mediocre Purdue team, 20-17. So one small data point. Let's go to the next one. Penn State in 2014 beat UCF 20-17. They came home and beat Akron 21-3. Now, I don't know what the point spread was that game, Adam, but I'm going to assume them being up 7 at halftime was a bit of a surprise over Akron in 2014. UCF came home and they had a bye week, so we'll remove them. 2022, Northwestern beat Nebraska. They came home, had a bye week, so you can't really use that. By the way, the 2022 Northwestern team, the best trivia piece is that they won one game all year, and it didn't happen in the United States. It happened against Nebraska over in Ireland. Nebraska came home, played South Dakota, an FCS program. Last year, Notre Dame played Navy over in Ireland. They won 42-3. That game, Notre Dame came home. They played an FCS team. Navy had a bye. Georgia Tech in 2016, they won against Boston College. 17-14, they came home, played Mercer, FCS team. Boston College came home and played UMass, who I'm assuming they probably were a bigger than 19-point favorite against UMass. They were up 13-7 at halftime. So very small sample size, but when you play an FBS opponent, you tend to be a bit sluggish, at least in the very small sample sizes that we have. Notre Dame in 2012, Penn State in 2014, Boston College in 2016. And that's pretty much it. So I'd be curious to see what Georgia Tech, how they look in that first half against Georgia State. But I'm with you. It does feel like the way that Brent Key wants to play this year, that they're going to be a team that can kind of lean on you and ultimately pull away from what I imagine is going to be a pretty thin Georgia State squad.
So I'm trying to pull up the Boston College number. Penn State was a 15.5 point favorite against Akron
in
that 2014 game. That's
Akron,
it.
Was Akron good?
I mean, being an alum, I can say they've never been good, but 21-3, yeah, 15.5. I looked it up on the Killer Sports database.
All right.
If I could figure out what the abbreviation is for Boston College in the query database, I could look that one up for you. Yeah, look, I mean, you know, it's definitely a unique thing, you know, to start the season over in Ireland. And look, there will be a lot of, you know, and we talked about on VSiN Primetime when I did a guest spot with you and JVT, the Troy and Nevada game. You know, we've seen a massive line movement in that game on Nevada, who looked a lot better, I think, than really anybody anticipated. Although I will say they got outgained by 2 yards per play in that game. So let's pump the brakes a little bit on that one. I think a lot of it is a fate of Troy, but there will be people that, you know, will look at this, and I don't know who Ball State plays in week two, but Ball State has a bye this week for God knows what reason.
Wait, but there will be a lot of people opens on a bye.
Yeah, they open on a bye, which is just outrageous. But there will be a lot of people that are like, oh, well, they played a game already, so, you know, they're in game shape, they're up to game speed. And it's also like, yeah, but then the other team has tape on them, so they can better prepare. So I think it's, you know, kind of a blessing and a curse in some respects. But I know that people will definitely be talking about it in the games that, you know, have, like Georgia Tech, like Florida State, you know, like Nevada, like SMU, stuff like that. But at the same time, then it means there's something on film that the coaches can actually break down.
Yeah, I wish I had the number, and I know it's floating out there, and I'm going to try to find it, of teams who play in week zero and how they fare ATS in week one. It's not great. I know that for sure. How about this, though? I found this pretty surprising, but as you pointed out regarding the SMU Nevada game and the discrepancy in yard per play, and then if you look at the box score of Montana State New Mexico, where New Mexico scored two defensive scores, it makes a little sense. But Bill Conley and his win post game win expectancies: Hawaii over Delaware State 99.9%, Montana State over New Mexico 97%. Which, once again, Montana State scored with under 10 seconds to go to get the lead. SMU, 99% over Nevada. And Georgia Tech, 97% over Florida State. Those are, I would say, for people who watched all four games, and yes, I watched pretty much every second of the Hawaii game because I had Hawaii. Those are pretty surprising numbers based off of how specifically Montana State, New Mexico, and SMU Nevada played out.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, one of the big, you know, tenets of my power ratings updates is to look at the box score because, yeah, New Mexico had two fumble return touchdowns in that game. And, you know, the other thing is you kind of want to look for some of the outliers too, right? Like Montana State had a 93-yard touchdown run in the fourth quarter. Well, that's going to kind of skew your yards per play when you have a 93-yard touchdown run. So, you know, those are things that I have to make sure I do my due diligence with the box score to be able to isolate those things, to be able to pick those things out, and to make sure that I'm not overreacting. Like, again, does it look bad that SMU, you know, needed to score 16 points in the fourth quarter to beat Nevada? It absolutely does. Also, they had a bunch of problems in terms of penalties, but they had 408 yards of offense and only had the ball for 23-43. Like, they played fast. They had some explosive plays. You know, obviously, I mean, neither team ran the football well in that game. But, you know, there are these little caveats that you want to look for when you're studying the box scores. And it will, if you go through that process, and you don't even have to have your own power ratings, but if you go through that process of looking at the box score and what happened and why the game played out the way it did, that will help you prevent overreaction because we're going to have a lot of overreaction in week one, week two, because we're all excited to have football back. We're going to, you know, diagnose everything, every problem, every little thing that goes into these games. The reality of it is, and I said this in my college football power ratings article this week, like every team will play their worst game and their best game at some point in the season. sometimes week one is just your worst or best game.
So your article up, Florida State -3.5, SMU -3, Hawaii -1.5, up Georgia Tech +2, Nevada +1.5, New Mexico +2. You know, for me, and we've talked about it all throughout the summer, Hawaii over 4.5 was the best bet of mine. The market moved in my direction. Yippee. But after that game one, hopefully that was the low point, because Delaware State is not a very good FCS program. And that game was tied in the second half at 14 apiece. SMU.
And Hawaii had a punt return touchdown in the first half.
Yeah, they did. That was important to some. And if you laid 10 in the first quarter like your boy, that was very fortunate to get that cover. Or if you had the first quarter over, because that punt return came with, I think, 10 seconds to go in the first quarter. I did see Colin Wilson point out that Hawaii had a 15% drop rate in the game. The game was played in like 30 to 40 mile an hour winds. There was a hurricane in and around Hawaii. So look, I guess as we look ahead for these games, and we're going to take a break in a little bit and we'll look at some of your favorite plays for week one. You've got the Nevada game, which you alluded to. Nevada goes to Troy. And I do wonder if that is a spot to potentially look at Troy.
Certainly in game, right?
It has that game moves on where it was 15.5 and then Nevada plays, you know, okay, better than we expected. SMU this week is playing Houston Christian, so we don't know what that number is going to be. Actually, there is. DraftKings has 43.5, so you know, you might see a better performance there. But Hawaii against UCLA, because this game right here, and I know we had Matt Humans on VSiN Primetime on Monday night, and JVT also talked about this as well. Both of them are now looking towards the Bruins. I'm debating whether it's an overreaction or maybe this is what Hawaii is. And this has been a number, Adam, that's been on the move all summer. Opened 18.5 at DraftKings, went as low as 12.5, back to 14, and that's where it is kind of market-wide. There's some 13.5s out there. So do we look at Hawaii as a team that they just played their worst game of the year, or is that who they are? And that's what I don't know. Also worth noting that Stephen McBride, leading wide receiver, did not play game one against Delaware State. And listening to the broadcast team, certainly sounded like Stephen McBride probably is not going to play this entire year for the Rainbow Warriors.
Yeah, I'll get to the UCLA-Hawaii game in a second. But I do want to mention real quickly about this Nevada and Troy game. So I went to Texas for my wife's birthday. So my wife's birthday is in early April. Wasn't that hot. But now that I live in Vegas, where I don't know what humidity actually is anymore, I was melting. I was dying. Now, not that I'm in great shape. I'm certainly not in Division I college football player shape. But the boys from Reno go down to Troy, Alabama this week. Heat index of about 91 at kickoff. And the humidity is going to be about 80% during the course of the game. So that's something you want to factor into the equation here, whether it's from a live betting standpoint, a second half betting standpoint, stuff like that, where, hey, there are some teams they're going to play in some places they don't usually play in, and they're going to be hot as hell, or they're going to be playing in elevation or something like that. So those are things you definitely want to keep in mind as we've got, you know, some of these quirky non-conference games early on in the season. But on the UCLA-Hawaii one, remember that line really took a dive down.
Yep.
When Deshaun Foster went to Big Ten Media Days and had like the most awkward coach intro interview, whatever, of all time. And then that line came down into the 12.5 range, as you mentioned. And now it's back up to 14. And frankly, with the way that Hawaii played last week, I could see it going to 14.5, even with UCLA going out to the island. But it's just so funny how reactionary these markets are. Now, it's definitely going to tighten up and get sharper as limits increase and as there's more interest in the game, stuff like that. It's not a chase game because it's a, you know, 7:30 Eastern, or that'd be 2:30 local time.
1:30 right now.
1:30.
Yeah.
So it's not a chase game for anybody, but hey, people saw Hawaii, so they're going to have an opinion on Hawaii. People didn't see UCLA, and all the talk about UCLA has been very negative in nature here, you know, leading up to the season. So I'd be curious to watch where that line goes. and see if, you know, maybe we do get some people that are like, man, Hawaii was so bad. I have UCLA minus 16 for what it's worth. I probably want more than 2.5 points, not around a key number early in the season to actually make a bet. Cause you know, 14 is not really that key, but if anything, it would be UCLA for me.
I just want to point out where this market has gone with this Nevada Troy game. So Jared Parker, who I don't know personally, but I've gotten to know because he was the offensive coordinator for Notre Dame. And it was a very bizarre courtship for Jared Parker to be Notre Dame's offensive coordinator when Tommy Reese left to go to Alabama last year prior to the season. And Notre Dame tried to hire Colin Klein from Kansas State. He declined and stayed at K-State. And then they went out and courted Andy Ludwig from Utah, took him around and took him to a cocky game. He was on the Jumbotron. And then reportedly they didn't want to pay his buyout. So they said, all right, Jared Parker, you're our offensive coordinator. And every Notre Dame fan was elated to hear that he got the Troy head coaching job. You wrote up this Troy team. Look, it touched 7 at Circa and then got bought back to 8. If this thing were to get to 7 again, as you alluded to, I think I'd have to look at Troy because it was 15.5, man. Like, this is gone a little bit too crazy, in my opinion. But also Troy, and this will be the final thing we say about the Troy Trojans, I would imagine, just doesn't have a lot returning, right? John Summerall, he goes to take the Tulane job. They lost their quarterback. They lost their leading rusher. They lost their leading receiver. They lost their top 2 tackle. I mean, they lost a ton of production from a year ago.
Yeah, they absolutely did. I mean, you know, they lost a lot. And look, I will say this. I mean, Troy's been pretty good about the guys that they hire. I mean, Neil Brown leveled up. He's, of course, at West Virginia still. He managed to shake off the hot seat last year. You know, Chip Lindsey, I think he's the offensive coordinator at North Carolina right now.
Yep.
You know, and then Summerall, of course, gets the job at Tulane, which I think is a really, really good fit for him. So maybe they know what they're doing here with the hire of Parker. But yeah, I mean, Troy's lost a ton. I still have them a 12-point favorite in this game. So, you know, I probably should have taken it once it dipped down to 7. I may still, but I also will probably look for an in-game position where, as I mentioned, I think the heat is just going to drain Nevada. But I want to circle back to something that you said, because I didn't even realize this. Not that Texas A&M and Notre Dame needs any more juice attached to it. Yeah. You know, Mike Elko's debut, the expanded playoff, that's a big game. I forgot about the Colin Klein thing. And of course, Colin Klein, Texas A&M's offensive coordinator this year.
Yeah, the Notre Dame-Texas A&M game, there's so many weird connections. Mike Elko was the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. He left after one season there in 2017. It was not pretty. He went back. He asked for more money. Notre Dame said, okay. Then he got more money from A&M. He went back to Notre Dame, and Jack Swarbrick reportedly said, go kick rocks and go to Texas A&M. And, oh, by the way, Riley Leonard was Mike Elko's quarterback just a year ago, and I'm sure, I guess I'm not sure, but I would imagine that Mike Elko would have been okay taking Riley Leonard to Texas A&M. RJ Oben went from Duke to Notre Dame. There's a lot of connections in this game, and yes, the Colin Klein factor. So there's a lot going on with that game. I'm curious your line on that game. Let's take a break. On the other side, we'll get some of Adam's favorite plays of week 1. We'll do that after a quick break.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Week 1 is just around the corner. We will have games on Thursday night. We will have games on Friday night. We will have games on Saturday night. We will have games on Sunday night. And we will have games on Monday night. I love Labor Day weekend, Adam. It is college football's weekend. Do I wish that we had maybe some more tantalizing Thursday night games? Maybe. But UNC Minnesota, a game that you have an opinion on, we will get to that one momentarily. But we were just talking about Notre Dame, Texas A&M. And Look, this is a game that I've probably spent too much time talking about. People are tired of me talking about Notre Dame. However, it is a big time game. It is one of the biggest games of the weekend. College Game Day will be in College Station for this one. And we've seen a lot of market movement on this game. It is now out to 3 at most shops in favor of Texas A&M. And Notre Dame, via their depth chart, officially announced that they will be starting Anthony Knapp, a true freshman at left tackle. They will be starting Sam Pendleton, a true sophomore at left guard. In total, Adam, they will have 6 career starts on the offensive line headed into College Station. So Notre Dame's offensive line will have Ashton Craig at center, who they are actually very high on, Billy Shrouth at right guard, and then Emil Wagner at right tackle. So the strength of Texas A&M is that D-line, and they will be going up against a very lacking seasoned offensive line.
So, you know, the thing about making power ratings is I try to keep it as scientific of a process as possible, right? You know, I don't want too many of my own biases to leak in. At the same time, I don't want to be so close to market that I don't have anything I can invest in. So my biases leak in a little bit. I have Notre Dame a 1.5-point favorite in this game. And I think the big reason why is because I've heard this song and dance before from Texas A&M. About all the talent that they have. You know, Jimbo Fisher was just ripping 5-star recruits from all over the country, all this kind of thing. And they underwhelmed every single year. I think Mike Elko is a better head coach than Jimbo Fisher. I think Colin Klein as the OC is really, really fascinating. But I've also got to see it. I want to know. I mean, this is a Notre Dame team that, frankly, should have beaten Ohio State last year. Sorry to open that wound again. I think they're a really good team. I think both of these teams should be really good, but the market has moved against my number. And so if the game plays out the way the market thinks that it will, I will dramatically adjust these two teams going into next week. But there's also a chance that maybe I'm right, that maybe Notre Dame, you know, is able to go into a hostile environment, spoil Elko's debut. Maybe Connor Wegman just isn't the guy that, you know, NFL draft evaluators think he could be by the end of the year. So I have Notre Dame -1.5, but it's not a game that I'm super confident in taking. There are some other games I do like, and we'll get to them here in a little bit. But obviously, I'm interested to see what happens in this one and see which one of these programs with high aspirations, you know, looks likeliest to live up to them.
For those who have been listening all throughout the offseason, first, thank you. I appreciate it. Secondly, you've heard me talk a lot about Notre Dame and my positions that I have on Notre Dame, where we got a little creative in June and made our own over 9.5 market at -$2, and then took over 5.5 conference, or excuse me, home wins at +140, which obviously this game does not apply. I love this defense for Notre Dame. Now, they have some questions at linebacker, a little inexperienced there, but the defensive line, which took a little bit of a depth hit with an injury to Gabriel Rubio during the during preseason. But if Howard Cross, who dealt with a little bit of a hamstring injury, is 100% healthy, and that's what we're basing it off of, and you've pointed out that injury reports are complete and utter meaningless in college football, this defense is loaded, man. They have a true pro in Benjamin Morrison at one cornerback position. Christian Gray emerged as a really lockdown corner on the other position from all reports from preseason camp. The Bronco Nagurski Award winner given out to the best defensive player in the country, Xavier Watts, is back. Adon Schuler beat out Rod Hurd, who came in as a 6-year senior from Northwestern. So he'll have a depth piece there in Rod Hurd. And Jordan Clark, Ryan Clark's son, is going to be the nickel. Like, this defense is loaded up, and it's led by Al Golden, who is highly, highly compensated as a defensive coordinator. He's been there for 3 years. So that's why when it was 49, I took some under. And honestly, I would still look under in this particular game. I think the two defenses are the two best units on the field. I think Notre Dame could potentially struggle from an offensive standpoint, especially if that defensive line is as good as we think that it is. And You know, I know Jay Bateman is technically the defensive coordinator, but let's be honest, it's Mike Elko. So you've got a great defensive mind in Mike Elko, a great defensive mind in Al Golden. And I just think this is going to be, it should be a 20-17 type of game, in my opinion. So I think this is more of an under game. At this point, at 3, I would be thinking about taking Notre Dame, but that's where I sit right on this one. I think it is a true coin toss game. I give the slight edge to A&M because of that home field. But I think the defenses are going to, they should, Adam, dominate this game.
Yeah, I think there's a real good chance that the defenses do dominate this game, especially, you know, we talked about it already with all the similarities. You've got two defensive-minded head coaches as well in Freeman and Elko. So, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, I kind of wonder, I wonder what your thoughts are on this, because I never really know how to answer the question. But, you know, there's always that question, right? I'm a baseball guy, you know, kind of by heart. Like, people always ask early in the season, is the hitting ahead of the pitching or vice versa? Mm-hmm. And I don't really know how to answer that question. In college football, are the offenses ahead of the defenses, vice versa? Are we all just, you know, everyone, because there's so many teams, it's so high variance, nobody really knows. What's your take on that whole thing?
Ooh, can I cop out and say case by case? Like,
sure, go ahead. Pull a Brad Powers and cop out and say case by case. He does it all. It's funny. I used to host a show called Bang the Book Radio, and I would have him on every Thursday, and I would ask questions like this, and I always got, it's on a case by case basis.
I know that is the Brad line, the case by case line. But I look at these two teams, and Notre Dame, let's look at them offensively. Got a new quarterback in Riley Leonard. You've got a bunch of new receivers in Chris Mitchell from FIU, Bo Collins from Clemson, and Jaden Harrison from Marshall. You've got Audric Estime gone for Notre Dame. You've got basically a whole new offensive line, and you've got a new offensive coordinator. So the defense for Notre Dame, it better be ahead of that offense, right? When you've got a veteran defensive coordinator, veterans all over that defense. And I know this is getting really in the weeds, but like, Notre Dame has 5 captains. 4 of them are defensive players. So it's going to be more of a defensive dominated team that I think as the year goes on, especially how the schedule plays out, I think the offense will get better. And then flip it over to Texas A&M. You know, you bring in Nick Scorton from Purdue, who's going to be probably a first round pick. You've got a defensive minded head coach, like you alluded to. And, you know, I know they lost some big time pieces to the transfer portal, but they also were able to bring in some pieces too. So I think when you're in bringing in a new mindset from an offensive side from Colin Klein, you know, you got to remember Mike Elko was the D coordinator at Texas A&M 3 seasons ago. So he hasn't really been gone for that long. He was the head coach at Duke for just 2 years. So I would think for this particular game, shouldn't the defenses be ahead of the offenses?
Hey, you would think so. You know, and look, I mean, I think it's easier to, maybe this is just circumstantial, but I think it's easier to say that defenses at premier programs are ahead of the offenses. Whereas like a game that's on my radar here, because this is what I do, and this is what you're going to hear from us early in the week, North Texas and South Alabama.
Yeah, right? Baby.
Dramatically different game from Notre Dame and Texas A&M. But that's a total of 64.5. And last year, South Alabama was a top 25 defense in a lot of areas, including yards per play. They were a top 30 scoring defense, top 30 in tackles for loss, stuff like that. But they lose Kane Womack, their head coach, to Alabama. They lose their defensive coordinator, Corey Batoon, to Missouri to the same role. They promoted their linebackers coach, Will Windham, and Major Applewhite, who was the OC, is now the head coach. So I look at a team like that, and I'm thinking, man, this defense has a chance to really, really drop off. At the same time, the offense lost LaDainian Webb and Colin Lacey. And Colin Lacey is a very good wide receiver. Remember the name, because he's going to play on Sundays.
He got hurt, though, at Louisville.
Yeah, he got hurt at Louisville. Yeah, he's out for a while. It's 6 weeks.
Collarbone, yeah.
I think it's 6 weeks, something like that.
Yep.
But yeah, so like South Alabama, like I'm thinking the defense is going to fall off because of all the losses, right? They lose effectively 2 defensive coordinators because their head coach is, you know, Kane Womack, who is an elite defensive mind. But the offense also has a lot of turnover, right? And then there's North Texas, who they were pitiful on defense last year, and that's being kind. Like, I don't know, you know, I don't know what we're allowed to say in terms of expletives on this show, but their defense was effing awful, right? I mean, they were beyond terrible, but the offense is really good. And so for me, I think in a game like that, an AAC versus Sunbelt type of game, like, I'm just thinking, shit, these two teams may run up and down the field and like get in the mid 70s. But I would never think that in a Power Four conference type of game, right? I'm going to go, these defenses will figure it out. So I think it's just kind of the difference to me. And like I said, maybe it's circumstantial, but I think the more elite the program, the more I expect the defense to be really good. And the lesser the program, the more I could see the offenses being ahead of the defenses.
All right, let's rifle through a couple of your best bets. And one is on Thursday, and it is the best game on Thursday. And the market moved in your power ratings direction, which is North Carolina at Minnesota. And we saw this game for most of the summer be lined Minnesota 2, 2.5. And this week, more specifically Sunday, we saw North Carolina money coming in and hitting the market. So right now, as we record this late on Monday night, Adam, you're looking at UNC 1.5 or 2. UNC is a team that you're very high on, you're bullish on. Where are you headed with this game with the movement lately on the Tar Heels?
I don't like your disparaging remarks here about Coastal Carolina and Jacksonville State. Battle of the Roosters. Chanticleers and the Gamecocks. Maybe that game should have been played at like 7 a.m. on Saturday just for the fun of it because both mascots are Roosters. How dare you not say that's the best game of the night?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I'm more intrigued about what the line's going to be for Sacramento State, San Jose State, because I'm just beyond fascinated what San Jose State's going to be this year with Kenny Amatalolo coming in, and they're not going to run the option. As he said on VSiN Primetime during Mountain West Media Days, they're going to run the spread and shred led by former Washington State offensive coordinator Craig Stutzman.
Stutzman.
Yes.
Sounds like a 90s sitcom last name.
Stutzman.
Right, exactly. look, this is why I like doing this show, because we talk about, they're not off the wall games, but they're games you're not going to hear about on a lot of shows. But look, every bet counts the same when you win it, right? So we're out here looking for opportunities. You know, that's what we're trying to find. And I think I have an opportunity with North Carolina, not only in this game against Minnesota, but for this season as a whole. I bet their alt season win total over 8.5. I also will probably, before Thursday, take a piece of them to win the ACC. I mean, first of all, what we saw from Florida State was pretty pathetic. Second of all, as much as I like Miami and the talent, I don't like Mario Cristobal, and I'm not alone in thinking that. And Dabo in his portal protest, I don't think Cade Klubnik is actually that good of a quarterback. So portal, I like this North Carolina team quite a bit. They bring in Max Johnson, who's played a lot of football in a lot of different places. Omarion Hampton, he'll run on Sundays in the NFL. He had over 1,500 rushing yards last year. The Tar Heels always find wide receivers. And much like I think we saw with Georgia Tech leveling up with Tyler Santucci as the DC this past weekend, North Carolina's got Jeff Collins now, which, nothing against Gene Chizik, who actually did a really good job from year one to year two with that Tar Heel defense. Collins was a pretty elite defensive coordinator in the SEC. Maybe not so much as a head coach, you know, at Temple and, you know, kind of, and then also at Georgia Tech, but he's a pretty elite defensive coordinator. I think North Carolina improves on defense. I think they'll be just fine on offense, even with losing Drake May. I had them a 2.5-point favorite in this game, so the market has absolutely moved towards my number. I like the Tar Heels. I got them at plus money earlier in the week when they were still a dog. I still think under 3, they're fine. I think they're clearly the better team here between the two.
So also on Thursday night, we get Colorado against North Dakota State, and the market is moving in Colorado's favor right now, circa out to 10, a couple other spots. Worth noting here, North Dakota State All-American safety Cole Wisniewski will miss, quote, significant time this year with foot surgery. Last year, he was PFF's number one graded FCS or FBS safety. He had 92 tackles and 8 interceptions. So pretty big loss there for North Dakota State. I don't have an opinion on this one. I actually think Colorado might be the right side. I think their athletes just might be too much for North Dakota State. I'm not going to lay 10. I will be looking to take Nebraska probably in week two. We've already talked about week three when Colorado travels to Colorado State. But anything else on Thursday? I mentioned, I don't know what the number is going to be, so I can't even guess. But if I'm getting, I don't know, are we going to get a touchdown, Sacramento State at San Jose State? Like, I think I might just take a shot on Sacramento State because I have no idea what San Jose State is going to look like with all the roster turnover there. I'm a Coach Ken guy. I was fortunate enough to be on the Navy broadcast for 3 years. Even prior to that, being in the DC area, I'm a huge believer in what he does as a leader, but I just think this could be a tricky one there. Opening night against Sacramento State, but I have no idea what that number is going to be, so I can't give an opinion yet on that game.
Well, Jeff Sagarin, who used to provide numbers to USA Today, and now he just provides them on his own website, he's got this one roughly in the 6.5 or 7 range. San Jose State, 117th in the country out of 263 Division I teams. Of course, there are 134 FBS teams. Sacramento State is 133rd for him. So this is a pretty decent FCS program here in this one. They're power rated 54.36. San Jose State, 58.62. And he's about 2.5 points for home field advantage. So going off of Sagarin, it'll be 6.5 or 7. I don't personally power rate the FCS. I know our good buddy Brad Powers, who we've already mentioned on the show, he does. So I'm not sure if maybe you're getting around the 7 number from him. But yeah, that's about what Sagarin has. And I like to use Sagarin for strength of schedule rankings as the season goes along. And again, as I mentioned, he power rates all 263 Division I teams. So by the way, Delaware State moved up 6 spots in his rankings after last week's game against Hawaii.
Way to go, Hornets.
They're 252 now out of 263.
For those wondering, Sacramento State did beat Stanford last year 30-23, albeit a very unique situation where Sacramento State's coach, Troy Taylor, is now the head coach at Stanford. So that was maybe a revenge spot for Sacramento State for their old coach leaving. Also, rankings mean nothing. But worth noting, Sacramento State per the FCS coaches poll is number 10 in the preseason poll. So didn't expect to spend that much time on that game, but here we are.
That's what we do. By the way, you know what? I got to say, there's a couple of things here I want to mention about the FCS before we get too far. The first is, if you're an FBS team and you lose to an FCS opponent in like week one or week two, everybody immediately discards you for the rest of the season.
Yes.
So the teams that lose to FCS programs early in the year generally tend to be pretty good ATS bets kind of coming off of that. No, unless they're just horrible, which is very much possible. But they tend to be pretty good bets because the court of public opinion just sells them immediately. The second thing is, some of these FCS teams are pretty good.
Yes.
I mean, there's a reason why Montana State was a 2-touchdown favorite against New Mexico. It's because they're a top 5 FCS program. And as I just mentioned, Sac State, you mentioned they're 10th in the FCS poll. They're 133rd for Sagarin. There are 134 FBS teams. Below them are teams like Ball State, Nevada, who we just saw, New Mexico State, Eastern Michigan, Middle Tennessee, UTEP, La Tech, FIU, Buffalo, the list goes on. So like, they're rated higher than some FBS teams. Just because they're Division I AA, don't write these teams off, because some of them would be very good if they played in the FBS ranks at, in the Sun Belt or Conference USA or something like that.
I don't know why this game came to mind. Actually, I do, because I bet their season went total over in 2022. The Bowling Green Falcons lost to Eastern Kentucky in 7 overtimes. And the following week, they beat Marshall, who was coming off a win over Notre Dame. So, yes. Should we give Brad Powers a third shout out? I'm going to do it.
Sure, why not?
One of his
he's paying for him, so yeah, why not?
Apparently. One of his favorite things, what you just mentioned, betting on teams that lose to FCS teams the following week, because you're getting them at an all-time low. I think there was, let me find it, Buffalo a couple years ago. I remember him talking about it on VSiN Primetime, or maybe it was the Nightcap, but they lost to like Holy Cross pulling it up now. Yep, lost to Holy Cross.
And speaking then, of which, by the way, Bob Chesney, now the head coach at James Madison.
So 2022, Buffalo lost to Holy Cross, who is a good FCS program. And then the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, they covered the next 6 games Buffalo did after losing to an FCS team. So sometimes there's value after you lose to an FCS team.
Yes, 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 there is. I got to say, we'll go ahead and kind of connect the dots here a little bit.
Go to Bob Chesney and James Madison. Let's go.
Oh, we are. We're going to Bob Chesney and James Madison. 6-point favorite against Charlotte. Like, I understand that Max Brown, the Florida transfer, may be pretty good. And I know that Charlotte, you know, Biff Poggi's an interesting guy because he's a little bit from the Jamie Chadwell tree of actually working in the financial world. You know, with hedge funds and stuff like that, but also just a guy who like coached high school football. Jim Harbaugh gives him a job at Michigan. He parlays it into the Charlotte gig, where Charlotte is a town that is very rapidly growing with a lot of industry, a lot of medical industry specifically. So like Poggi, not only did he invest his own money in the program, but he has friends, very high ranking friends that he's getting to donate to the NIL collective there at Charlotte and stuff like that. Kind of a cool story. And they brought in Max Brown from Florida, as I mentioned. They brought in Cartavious Norton from Iowa State. They're better. And he also got the program to spend some money on assistant coaches as well. I don't think they're under a touchdown to James Madison better. And I know that the Dukes lost a ton too. And to this point, Bob Chesney has not yet named a starter. I think it'll be Dylan Morris, the transfer from Washington. But under a touchdown, man, I got to take this. Like James Madison just... Again, they lose Kurt Cignetti. They lose Jordan McLeod. They lose a bunch of guys. But, like, that's a really deep program for just recently coming from the FCS. I don't think Charlotte's there yet. Because of the line move that we have, and I'm concerned that maybe there's a suspension or an injury that I don't know about, something like that. Because of the line move that we've had here, I have James Madison minus 12. 6 points is about the biggest overlay in my power ratings for week one. I got to take the Dukes here. And if I get burned by Charlotte and they look really good, so be it. And I'll make a big adjustment. But James Madison under a touchdown, I had to take.
Kirk Cignetti, now the head coach of Indiana, and Wes Reynolds on the podcast gave out over 5.5. Totally not a homer play. And then when I started to dive into it, I bet it too. And Kirk Cignetti had the line of the media days saying, "I win. Google me." And if you Google Kirk Cignetti, he does win, whether it was at Indiana or University of Pennsylvania or at Elon or at James Madison. Well, Bob Chesney, handsome fella, by the way, he wins. Google him. D3 Salve Regina. D2 Assumption. FCS Holy Cross. Just mentioned Holy Cross, as we alluded to, winning over Buffalo in 2022, taking them, the Crusaders, from... Where are they in? Amherst? Somewhere in there. Worcester? No, they're in Worcester, I think. Whatever. They're in Massachusetts. And now he's at James Madison. I do wish he was able to bring his quarterback with him, who was an absolute beast, who ended up going to UNLV. And we've talked about him a lot, getting his name, Matt Saluka, who may or may not win the job there. But all right. Anything else that you like in week one? Where the number currently lies.
There's a few things I'm looking at here. Some are power ratings plays. Some are just kind of games I want to take. I like Wyoming against Arizona State. This is a late game here in Tempe. It'll be 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific time for this game. I get it. That gives the student fan base a good amount of time to, you know, maybe partake in a cocktail or two. So it should be a great environment down there at Sun Devil Stadium. But I think Wyoming might be pretty good. You know, Jay Sauvel, he was the defensive coordinator last year, so nothing will really change on that side of the ball. But they bring in Jay Johnson, a guy who runs a little bit more of a, you know, spread-ish pro-style type of offense. They said they want to play a little bit faster too, which I think will be really interesting because typically they're just, we hand it off to whoever's in the game at running back and he gets as many yards as he can, and we do that again and again and again and again until we get down the field. I think they'll be a little bit more balanced this year. And they got a big guy in Evan Sobota, who's their starting quarterback. 6'5", 230-something. People are Of course, you know, because you have to compare everybody to somebody.
Well, it's his own fault. He's wearing 17. So, yeah, you know, if you don't want to be, if you don't want to be compared to Josh Allen, don't wear his number when you when you look like him.
Why the hell haven't they retired his number
yet? That's a fair point. Fair point.
So, I mean, maybe it's the only jersey that fits this kid. I don't know. But, yeah, I like Wyoming getting 6.5 there. I have it 3. I'm not a big Arizona State guy. I'm not a big Kenny Dillingham guy. Not a big Marcus Arroyo guy, who's the new offensive coordinator there.
Harrison Whaley, worth noting, leading rusher, is out for this game. So an unfortunate injury there for Wyoming in week one.
Yeah, doesn't matter for them, though. I feel like they just plug and play any running back.
Just point it out.
I don't know. I mean, it's just kind of the style that they play. I've already alluded to this North Texas and South Alabama game, but I need to go back to it. I think North Texas might figure it out this season. The defense was, again, as I mentioned, just putrid last season. And this is the PG version of me talking about this defense. But look, I mean, Eric Morris knows how to coach offense. And he's got a transfer quarterback here in Chandler Morris, who comes over from TCU. He's also got Zach Evans, who's a running back at TCU and Minnesota. I think there's some offensive firepower here for this team. We'll see if they fix the defense, because that's clearly what they need to fix. But I don't think South Alabama is going to be very good offensively. They're going to run out. I think Gio Lopez is going to be the starter. He's just 5'11". He's a little guy. He did play well in the bowl game, but I don't really like small quarterbacks. It's a tough position to play when you're not a big guy. So I think North Texas could be really interesting here. This is not a power ratings play for me at all. I mean, I have this line 3.5. So I'm not crossing any key numbers or anything like that, but I think North Texas might surprise some people this year. So I like them a little bit there in that game against South Alabama. A couple others that are on my radar for this week, along with Hawaii and North Carolina that we talked about already. Look, Northwestern may not be very good, and frankly, I don't think that they're going to be, but that's a pretty small line against Miami of Ohio this week, where I know Chuck Martin is somebody that a lot of sharper people love. He tends to be a pretty good ATS coach, but I also think David Braun is a pretty good head coach, especially with what we saw last year, how he wound up getting the job so late after Pat Fitzgerald got caught up in some scandal. Braun was a first-year defensive coordinator at Northwestern and did a phenomenal job as the head coach. I just think 3 is too short. I have this one 7. So I like Northwestern here.
Chuck Martin, not happy about Alabama stealing his kicker either. So
did you see the clip?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, that's incredible.
No, Martin's incredible. I mean, he's been at Miami now for 10 years, maybe 12. You pointed it out. 11-3 ATS a year ago were the Red Hawks. All right. I'm gonna close with this because I think people are starting to realize what sickos you and I are. And
Don't give me Eastern Michigan.
No,
UMass.
This isn't a bet. This is a tracker, and we're going to maybe incorporate some owl sounds. So there are 4 FBS teams with the nickname Owl: Rice and Florida Atlantic, and arguably the 2 worst teams in the FBS, Temple and Kennesaw State. So what we're going to do every episode is we're going to update the people on Temple and Kennesaw State. And I want to know who will end up with the most wins this year, Temple or Kennesaw State. I'm very excited about this. And I think this will be the perfect close to every episode to update the people on Owl Watch, Kennesaw State versus Temple. What do you think, Adam? You in?
Well, first of all, I mean, that is probably the most sicko thing you've ever done on this show.
Can we get some hooting sound? Woo, hoo-hoo!
Maybe we can get Hooters to be a sponsor.
Hey, not a sponsor. Could be.
Of this show. Look, I got to say, in the College Football Betting Guide, I wrote up the AAC, and I suggested with my Temple write-up, if you find a market for fewest wins in college football, I think Temple has a very good shot at it. Their win total is 2.5. I have them at 2.18. I think the only FBS team I had lower was
K Kennesaw State.
Mexico? Maybe Kennesaw State.
You had Kennesaw. You have Kennesaw State 134 and Temple 133. That's why this is going to be the loveliest.
But I have Kennesaw State with 3.32 wins.
Well, they do play the.
They play a terrible schedule.
They play UT Martin, the Skyhawks.
I mean, let's be honest here, right? Temple doesn't play an FCS team, right?
So they do not. Their schedule is actually pretty challenging.
Their schedule is actually challenging. I mean,
Oklahoma week one and they're 42-point underdog.
I have them at least a touchdown dog in every single game this season. And they play UConn. They play Navy.
UConn's not terrible. Pretty bad. Pointed out.
No. Tulsa at home and UConn on the road are their 7-point dog spots for me. And then against the fellow Owls, Florida Atlantic, I have them an 8-point dog in week 12. So I have them at least a touchdown dog in every game. So I think Temple will be the worst team in college football.
I agree. And I did the college football preview during Bet Bash. And at one point I turned to someone in the crowd and I said, Temple is bleeping awful. I don't know why it came up, but I may have said that and with Bud Elliott and Brett McMurphy on the stage with me. But I'm very excited about keeping tabs on Temple and Kennesaw State because
here's a question.
Yes.
All right. -110 both ways.
Kennesaw State.
Temple plus Kennesaw State. Do they have more wins than either of the other Owl teams?
Ooh. I know Rice is decent. I haven't looked at their schedule.
I think what Rice and Florida Atlantic are both around 5.5. Well, Rice is 6.5, I guess. Florida Atlantic 6.5 too.
Yeah, I would take.
So -110 is a terrible number.
Yeah, I would take the other two.
Yeah. I like Florida Atlantic under, so that's kind of why I'm thinking about it.
All right.
But I don't know. I also think it's funny that three of the four Owl teams are in the same conference, which is neither here nor there.
No, not anymore. Well, right. Oh, FAU's in. Oh, I forgot. Yeah, FAU's in the AAC now. That's right. Yeah. Maybe one day Kennesaw State will get the call up to the big leagues. Oh, don't worry. Kennesaw State does have to play Liberty, who plays zero Power Four teams and is a slight favorite to be the representative in the New Year's or the college football playoff.
Which
September 28th, ladies and gentlemen, go Appalachian State. Let's go.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go, Boone. Boys from Boone.
I don't want to get into this, but I think it bears mentioning from a betting standpoint. Does the College Football Playoff Committee really want to put Liberty in?
No, they don't. I really don't think they do.
I don't think so either.
But I also think Boise State's overrated and Memphis's schedule's really hard.
Yep.
So
honestly, Tulane could be the team. I love John Sumrall.
But if Liberty,
their schedule's rough. But they'd have to knock off one of Oklahoma or Kansas State.
And I know we're an hour in, so I don't want to go too deep down it, but that's why if you don't want Liberty in the college football playoff, you need either East Carolina or Appalachian State or both to beat them in late September, because I don't see anyone in the CUSA beating them. Western Kentucky goes to Liberty. I forget this. Jacksonville State, I think, goes to Liberty. Like, I just don't see them losing in the conference.
I don't think East Carolina would be half bad for what it's worth.
I'm circling that right now. I think East Carolina is...
I think they at least cover.
Undervalued, and if the projections are accurate, which are out there in like that 13-12 range, give me ECU all day. Plus those points at Lynch at Liberty.
I have it 14.5, but I agree with you.
Yeah. All right. We have gone way into sicko mode, which I love, which is why I love these early early week podcasts. And a few people are still listening. Thank you. You are like Kevin Durant said to his mom, you're the real MVP. And let's keep track of Temple and Kennesaw State. Temple week one, 43-point underdog to Oklahoma, and Kennesaw State opens up. I forget who they open up with, but
UTSA. They're getting 25.
Meep, meep. All right. For Adam Burke, you can read his work over at vsin.com all throughout the week. We'll keep tabs of his best bets, of course, here on the podcast. I'm Tim Murray. We're back later this week. Matt Humans and I will be breaking down the week one card with our best bets. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. What other podcast is just even thinking about a Temple versus Kennesaw State season-long update other than the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. So give us that five-star review. Tell a friend about the podcast. We'll be back later this week right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.